Ransomware is one of the biggest cybersecurity issues facing the world today, with organizations all across the globe falling victim to cybercriminals who are extorting them for ransoms. But how do these attackers get into the networks, and what are they doing once they're there? And how can you protect your network from falling victim to one of these attacks in the first place? I'm Danny Palmer, this is ZDNet Security Update, and with me to talk about ransomware and how to stop it is Ed Williams, Director of Spider Labs at Trustwave. Thanks for joining me, Ed. So first of all, ransomware is so common nowadays, but how are attackers actually getting into these networks in the first place? Because it seems like it's almost easy pickings when you see how many different types of attacks there are, I guess, on a daily basis even.
Yeah, thanks for having me on this podcast as well. So how are ransomware attackers getting in? So if we take it back to basics, we know there's probably three or four main attack vectors that they're using. So they're looking to exploit vulnerabilities. So that's where then there's an external facing bit of infrastructure, maybe a VPN or some computer that's sitting on the internet, and it's not being patched quickly enough. So the attackers are really clever. They know that if something is missing a vulnerability, they can look to exploit it and then move through the organization that way. Then there's other simple things like password guessing, you know, good old passwords, been around forever. They'll probably still be around for quite a while to come. And people are not very good at choosing good or random passwords. And then probably the third thing then would be some sort of email or phishing compromise. So that's when a PDF or something malicious comes in via an email, and it's just too tempting to click on it, and people click on it, and then they get exploited, and then the attacker is in, or the ransomware is in and up and running.
Two of those things you mentioned there, passwords and the way that email phishing is used in some of these attacks, particularly when the ransomware gangs are very hands-on, are some of the most common ways, especially, you know, given the last 18 months, how people are working. We can see now we are both talking to each other from our homes here, and a lot of people, this is how we are having to work now. We don't have that face-to-face contact. So a lot more work is being done over emails and collaboration tools. And that's something that, unfortunately, the attackers have successfully taken advantage of over the last 18 months.
Absolutely. So what we're seeing is there's a rise of organizations using the cloud. So whether that's a SaaS product like collaboration tools and emails. And with that rise in the use of the cloud, the attackers are actually using that because there's a bigger footprint for them to attack via the internet. But they're also using the cloud then as their backbone to be able to use, whether it's ransomware as a service or to be able to move quickly between different providers, so they're not getting caught quickly. So it's a bit of a sort of two-pronged attack, I guess, that the rise of the cloud is also facilitating the rise of ransomware.
So when the attackers get into networks, how do they actually go from, you know, that initial compromise to triggering the ransomware? Especially when, you know, these things in many cases only become apparent when that happens, even though the attackers in some cases have been in the network for weeks or months, laying the foundations for the campaign.
So there's probably two or three things to think about there. So once a piece of sort of malware or ransomware is in an environment, what it'll quickly do, and this is all automatic, it'll look for some way to escalate its privileges. So say it'll land on a desktop or some sort of end user device, it'll figure out what it is. It'll then say, okay, how can I now get some sort of admin privilege? And there's numbers of different mechanisms to be able to do that. Again, weak passwords, patching, you know, the same things we'll have heard time and time again, or some sort of misconfiguration. Once it's got that sort of elevated privilege, what it'll then look to do is to move laterally. So we know, you know, from being a pen tester for 15 years, I know that organizations are not very good at segmenting their network or not very good at not sharing admin passwords. So if you're able to get an admin credential on one host, you're very, very likely to be able to get an admin credential on another host and then just move across. And then what that ransomware will then look to do, because they're pretty clever in how they do it, they will then look for sensitive files, whether they're sort of SQL databases or CSV files or things that are large in nature in terms of data, and then comb through that, use that, send that back to their command and control center, probably on the cloud, and then move on to the next target, and then on to the next target, and then on to the next target. So it happens very quickly.
So what happens for organizations, for victims, I suppose, when they see that they are the victim of a ransomware attack? I mean, in many cases, it's only when they see that ransom note on the screen and the fact they can't access most of their systems that they know it's happened. So what is the experience they go through then? Because it must be something of a panic, I suppose, especially if you can't operate anything at all.
It is. So the impact is probably three main areas that we see. So the first one, once the ransomware is in and propagating around, would be the exfiltration of data. So anything that is sensitive or deemed of interest will get siphoned out via a command and control channel. Good, mature organizations would probably see that happening or have some inclination that something is odd and they'd be able to stop that. Less mature organizations, that is difficult. I'll be honest, probably difficult for mature organizations as well. What particularly pernicious bits of ransomware and malware will do is look to destroy backups. So these are hot backups that are within that infrastructure. And then probably the last thing that they'll do then is encrypt that data so you then as the end user of the business can't actually function as a business. So there's, again, threefold. The data goes out, they stop you then from being able to back up any data and then encrypt that data and asking for, I know, whether it's Bitcoin or cash or whatever they're after.
This data element has become a key part in many of these campaigns because not only are they encrypting your data, they are stealing it and using that as another extortion tactic as well. Because as we've seen, there are plenty of organizations which that don't pay the ransom, but then they still get their data leaked on the internet because they haven't paid that ransom. And in many other cases, that the threat of that data is pushing the victim to paying the ransom because they could take time to try and manually restore it themselves. But when they think, oh no, our data is going to be leaked if we don't pay this now, some are taking that option, which is just another string to the bow of these attacks.
Yeah, that's the tightrope that organizations need to walk down these days. So, you know, we know data really is the new oil. As far as organizations, you look at, you know, and the cloud, everything is data driven. There's so much we can do with data, and it really is the lifeblood of many organizations. So they really, really need to ask themselves, okay, before the fact, hopefully, what happens if our data gets lost? What happens if this data gets compromised? Can we manage as a business? Can we continue? And those are the questions that need to be asked, hopefully, before a ransomware attack is sort of initiated in that organization.
So if an organization falls victim to a ransomware attack, what are the sort of things they should be considering in order to try to make the attack as least effective as possible? Although at this point, if they've fallen victim, things must be quite bad already.
Yeah. So it depends how mature they are in an organization. I would suggest the first thing to do is not to panic. And to, again, sounds easier than said. So, but what we see mature organizations do, and when we're pen testing, we try and mimic ransomware and sort of nation state attackers, is what you want to make it difficult to cross certain boundaries so you can lessen the impact of a malware attack or a piece of ransomware. So if you can do that and say just, you know, one business unit gets compromised, then that is much easier to isolate, to determine what's going on, contain it, and then, you know, bring services back online. If it's an entire organization, then it gets really difficult. So you've got to, first of all, determine what is going on, where it's going on, and bring those services down, then try and eradicate that malware, ransomware, whatever it might be, a host at a time, and then look to restore data then from maybe a cold backup or something like that.
So how can victims try to eradicate the malware? Because as we've seen, these ransomware attackers can be quite tenacious and even vindictive if they think they are being found out. We talked about the potential for data to be leaked or other things that they might do as well in order to try and really sort of twist the knife in order to prevent victims from trying to call outside help.
It's really difficult once you've been hit by ransomware. You know, we've seen numbers, you know, tens and tens of organizations, hundreds of organizations who've been compromised, and, you know, they're down for weeks, maybe even longer. So it's very difficult. But the first thing to do is to understand, okay, what is going on? That is the difficult thing. Because what the ransomware will actually do very quickly is identify what your network looks like. once it knows what your network looks like through various commands it can run on various different servers and hosts, it can figure out then a plot through that network. And you know, we've seen all too often that organizations don't know what assets they've got. They don't know what data flows they've got, and you know, malicious code, malware, ransomware will figure that out very quickly. And it, you mentioned it being particularly pernicious. It is. It'll actually, in some instances, sit and wait for a certain action or trigger to happen and then do what it's intended to do. So it's very, very difficult. Again, it's easy for me to say the best thing an organization can do is to get ahead of it and make sure they've got those hurdles in place. So first of all, the initial access is very difficult. Then the sort of consolidation and preparation, where I talked about the lateral movement and the privilege escalation, make sure that is really hard. And then the impact, then making sure that doesn't happen or the impact is as minimized as can be. But again, all very difficult, needs to be planned, needs to be thought out before the case.
So what are some of the key things that organizations can do to help protect their network from falling victim to a ransomware attack in the first place? Because I suppose, you know, the best way to make sure that a ransomware attack doesn't have a massive impact is to not become the victim in the first place, which in the world we're living in right now might be easier said than done, but there are still steps which can be taken.
Oh, absolutely. There's always things that can be done. So the first thing that I would always recommend all organizations do, regardless of size, is have a really good understanding of what assets they've got. And the reason why that is if you don't know what assets you've got, then you can't secure them. And all too often we speak with organizations as we were able to compromise this host, and the first two things they say is, oh, we thought we turned that off, but we don't know what that is. And that is what is getting exploited and getting attacked by ransomware and malicious threat actors. So really understand what you've got, both externally, so internet facing, and then internally as well. Again, sounds easy, but in large, complex, heterogeneous environments, it's something that needs to be done all the time and constantly. Once you've got a good understanding then of what your assets look like, then you can build in layers then. So you can do good vulnerability management to making sure that there's no exploits available for your kit that's out there. Making sure that you're doing this regular, because we know exploits, they come out pretty quick and they can get weaponized pretty quick by malicious threat groups. Again, once you know what assets you've got, making sure that you're locking all these things down. You know, all too often we see things like RDP on the internet or VPN without 2FA or multi-factor authentication, all those good things. Making sure that you've got the basics covered. And then as well, passwords, making sure that you've got a good understanding, you're removing default passwords, you're removing quote unquote weak credentials, because they will get compromised. And then you've also got things, defense in depth type things, and like good segregation. Again, difficult to do in reality, but totally possible once you've got a good understanding of what your environment looks like. And as well as that, making sure things are run with least privilege. So not having one element get compromised and then that just leaves total access. So making sure, say an end user is compromised, then that is the only thing that bit of ransomware can do, is compromise that one user. So there's a lot there, but it really goes back to the basics. And the reason why we call them the basics is because they need to be done across an enterprise. Very difficult to do in reality.
Definitely. That's one of those things here where, you know, it's easy to give out this advice, but if you're a massive organization, you know, sometimes these things can get lost, especially, you know, if you're having to deal with people, you know, being remote now. It's not so easy to, you know, provide software updates and patching and that sort of thing. If all of your users have their devices, particularly if they're using applications which aren't cloud-based, that can make things really tricky.
Oh, definitely. These are really complicated issues. But, you know, a lot of the tooling is available, but to deploy it at scale takes effort. And it's very difficult for organizations really to get an understanding of the return on that investment. It's funny, you know, we'll ask an organization before a breach, what's your security budget? And it's X amount. After a breach, it's almost unlimited in many situations. So it's having that discussion and having that understanding of what is the impact should the worst happen. And then once you start that, then you can build up, as we mentioned, asset management. Getting things regularly pen tested is a very good way of making sure that you're staying ahead of the curve. And we know that Technology is something we can test, but you've also got to look at the people and the process. We, you know, right back at the beginning of this conversation, we spoke about phishing. That is still so popular. Organizations and ransomware will still leverage phishing because they know people can easily be seduced into clicking on things and opening things that they shouldn't be doing.
Well, hopefully anyone watching this will take this advice on board. They can help them avoid being the next victim of a ransomware attack that we're talking about. Thanks for joining me on ZDNet Security Update, Ed. And for more information on how to keep your network secure from cyber attacks, ransomware, and all manner of things on the internet, be sure to like and subscribe to the ZDNet YouTube channel. And of course, there's plenty of articles, features, and guides on ZDNet.com. Thanks for watching.